The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. It's time now to return to the July 2021 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is Hot Dog, the story of Smithfield's famous Franks, along with some information about road trips, which is what we're going to start with today. Exit Here, an I-95 road trip. I-95 is the unofficial border between the Piedmont and Coastal Plain, where North Carolina's rolling hills give way to sandy flatlands. Travelers use I-95 to get to their destinations quickly, but scattered between Roanoke Rapids and Lumberton are shopping meccas, art galleries, baseball games, and those famously bright red leaf or red bright leaf hot dogs, plenty of reason to take a break from the interstate. We start with Main Street Magic. On the Avenue, the beating heart of Roanoke Rapids, a shop called Rivertown, keeps reinventing itself, delivering just what its customers are looking for, including simply a comforting spot to spend an afternoon. Written by Susan Stafford Kelly. If only the notion of consignment stores had been familiar to me 4 decades ago when I was a newlywed desperate for furniture. Choices were limited to hand-me-downs, my physician father-in-law's examining table, which we sawed the legs off to use as a coffee table, and used furniture stores where we bought a fake wood Formica-topped table for fine dining. But a consignment store might sell you a silver pitcher hammered out by Paul Revere himself. These days, the concept is ever-evolving. Just ask Ed Williams and Tony Hall of Roanoke Rapids, longtime friends who took an exit, if you will, from longtime careers into the consignment business. Maybe less than an exit than a hard right, because it's not like 27 years as an OBGYN and healthcare administrator, that would be Ed, for in several decades of teaching and newspaper writing, Tony, lend themselves to antiques, objets, and fine furnishings. But Tony had always had an itch to own a store, and with 3 storage units, a shed, and an attic full of furniture purchased at estate sales and auctions, I was a bit of a hoarder, he admits, a consignment shop was the obvious choice. For Ed, not so much. I was ready for retirement, not retail, he says, and I thought Roanoke Rapids was a town in Virginia. Close, the state line is about 10 miles away. Then the perfect building in the perfect location became available, and the duo took another metaphorical exit into the Avenue. In Roanoke Rapids, the Avenue refers to Roanoke Avenue, the town's main street heart and historic pulse since its beginnings. Ed was in. The men's differing personalities merged into a shared goal. Determined and philosophical, Ed says, life is about assuming some sort of calculated risk, and we took a deep dive. Tony, optimistic and lively, took on the role of educating himself with market research. The town of Roanoke Rapids did its part, too. Economic development organizations got involved. Red tape was shortened. The wonder of a small town is that people bend over backwards to help you, Tony says. Rivertown Consignments opened for business on October 12, 2017. Within 6 months, Tony and Ed were looking for another exit ramp. Young buyers exclaimed, oh, my grandmother had this, about a Wedgwood serving dish or a mahogany chest, but they had no interest in owning it. So much for porcelain and antiques. Tony and Ed began phasing out consignment vendors and phasing in interior design assistants and staging for real estate agents. Simultaneously, they organize gatherings and philanthropic events up and down the avenue. Progressive dinners, a shamrock supper stroll, sip and shop Saturdays, book clubs and church groups held meetings at Rivertown, embracing its stylish vignettes and industrial chic vibe. Never mind Tony's homemade truffles. And if a customer was looking for a particular item, Ed and Tony made it their business to find it. Rivertown Consignments became Rivertown. And now, 95% of its inventory is new, from leather and upholstered furniture to twisted branch coffee tables and end tables, rope benches, lamps, candle holders, and mirrors, plus jewelry, quilts, and food products handmade by North Carolina artisans. Tony can't be denied his love for vintage, though, which explains the lunch boxes from earlier eras, old-fashioned Valentines, and traditional Easter bunnies and basket centerpieces, all of which, as a classic example of a small retail business, placed Rivertown right on in the bullseye for failure when the pandemic hit. With government shutdown decrees and frightened customers, Ed and Tony panicked, and then, just as before, steered in another direction. Social media was a lifesaver. Tony held virtual cooking classes and wine tastings featuring products in the store, and left baskets of the same on eager clients' porches. When a customer needed anything, from a diffuser to a light fixture, everything from product photography to payment was handled online. When too much art inventory became a problem, the pair staged an online auction in conjunction with the Roanoke Valley Chamber of Commerce and others. And sometimes the store was simply a haven from the confusion and anxiety created by the pandemic. One client came and said, "I just wanted to sit here for a couple of hours, somewhere beautiful where I feel safe," Tony says. Ed adds, even in regular times, there are so many barriers to social engagement. And now this. People were so appreciative of the approach we took. That attitude extended to the 50,000 Santa Clauses they bought for the Christmas season. People needed joy, they figured, and we decided to just, Ed hesitates, unleash jubilation. Nearly every Santa sold. And still, the pair continue to think outside the box. They helped out with a food pantry at their church, decided now was the time for an inspirational gift line, and when Halloween rolled around, returned half of their profits from the hand-blown glass pumpkins created by artists at Starworks Studio back to the nonprofit teaching facility at Montgomery County. Ed describes the 4 years of Rivertown's existence as a journey of redefining and reinventing. Anyone who can figure out retail should get a Nobel Prize, he muses. Indeed. Yet for an establishment that began with local consignment vendors and antique break fronts and has transformed into one carrying sophisticated sofa tables alongside simple Amish furniture, Ed hails from Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, Rivertown is thriving. For Ed, life is about creating a legacy and giving back in a whole different capacity. "I never wanted to only be remembered as the guy who delivered babies. And though Riverton draws customers from Richmond, Greensboro, and Raleigh, what makes Tony happiest is how Roanoke Rapids has embraced and supported Rivertown. At least once a week, someone walks in the door and says, 'I can't believe we have a store like this,' he says, grinning. Quite the compliment for both Rivertown and Roanoke Rapids. And quite the accomplishment for a couple of fellows who detoured from their midlife trajectories, took a turn on the avenue of a small town, and delivered a dream for both." Rivertown is at 933 Roanoke Avenue in Roanoke Rapids. Their website is rivertownconsignments.com. And now, down by the riverside, a former cotton mill just off the interstate in Halifax County has taken on a new life. Today, the enormous 122-year-old building is an antiquarian's playground packed with rare treasures and stories around every corner. Written by Bridget Booher. For nearly a decade, Wanda Sykes has been on a never-ending treasure hunt. One of the savvy vendors at Riverside Mill in Halifax County, She's parlayed a lifelong appreciation for antiques into a post-retirement gig that finds her and her husband, Phil, crisscrossing the state in search of rare, historic, and charmingly curious pieces. While Sykes loves 19th-century primitive pine furniture, her instincts for what will sell translate into an astonishing assortment of finds, from Victorian-era cross-stitch to Santos dolls to a collection of Scherenschnitte, cut paper designs by North Carolina artist Tina Gregory. Riverside Mill, a restored 85,000 square foot former textile factory, opened as an antiques mall in 2009. Located just a mile and a half off of I-95 in Weldon, it attracts both hardcore collectors and intrigued day trippers. Travelers up and down the East Coast pop in to stretch their legs, look around, and more often than not, leave with something new or something old, and sometimes a bit of both. As visitors stroll along the original 4-inch tongue and groove pine floors, sunshine pouring through the windows to illuminate exposed milk-washed bricks, they stumble upon things that they've spent years searching for, as well as gotta-buy-it knickknacks that they never knew they needed. One day I was up in Roanoke Rapids, Sykes remembers, and I got a call that a man wanted to buy my entire center aisle inventory. Wagon wheels, old tools, farm implements, bins of nails, and an old stove, all of it. She and her husband scour regional auctions, field calls from friends and neighbors who are downsizing their parents' or grandparents' estates, and get tips from fellow dealers about items of interest. They love learning about the provenance of the pieces they acquire, and sharing these stories with enchanted buyers. Every day is a new adventure, Sykes says. The Riverside Mill Complex also houses a contemporary furniture showroom of overstocks and discontinued items, a bay devoted to women's clothing from various online and cable TV retailers, and an expansive lower level with items ranging from housewares to women's shoes. There's also a brightly lit gallery space featuring original works by North Carolina artisans. Yet, for those in the antique market, or rather those in the market for rare and unexpected treasures, the Antiques Mall inventory is sure to elicit gasps of delight and nostalgic flashbacks. 60s kids who turned into bonanza will appreciate a vintage, slightly worn children's cowboy outfit, complete with leather boots and a navy felt hat. Elvis aficionados will thrill to find a gently loved copy of his Kissin' Cousins album, and discriminating antiquarians will relish a pristine early 20th century handmade primitive Hoosier hutch and a late 19th century metal icebox. The Riverside Mill building dates back to 1899 when a group of local businessmen formed the Weldon Cotton Manufacturing Company to capitalize on the South's booming textile industry. Like other mills that sprang up along our rivers and streams to harness the power of moving water, the company was located in close proximity to the Roanoke River, which meanders more than 400 miles from the Blue Ridge Mountains in southern Virginia to Albemarle Sound. Weldon also claimed distinction as a hub for 5 railroads, including the Wilmington and Weldon Line, which was the longest railroad in the world when it was completed in 1840. The mill changed hands many times over the decades before becoming warehouse space and offices. By the dawn of the 21st century, the building was sitting vacant, sliding toward disrepair. One day, retired Virginia Beach lawyer Keith Cutthrill spotted the old mill on a website featuring historic properties for sale. He saw a business opportunity in the decrepit brick building and bought it. "I immediately thought, what have I done?" he says, chuckling. The basement was full of water. There were termites and trees growing through the foundation, and one section of the roof was falling in. The civil engineer I know asked me if I'd lost my mind. Cuthrell's gamble may have been a calculated risk, but it's one that the residents of Halifax County welcomed with enthusiasm. After all, the adjacent Roanoke River Canal was listed to the National Register in 1976, and the Weldon Historic District was established in 1996, a testament to the region's interest in historic preservation. These days, Riverside Mills General Manager John Carver can be found behind the cash register, and he often scratches his head over what people fall in love with. But Carter confesses that he, too, has succumbed to the tantalizing and mysterious pull of the past, calling out to the present. One day he spotted a Lenox China dinner plate in the discontinued Lenox pine pattern. From that purchase of one dinner plate, Carver says, I now have a service of 24 place settings, plus serving pieces, a teapot, coffee pot, butter dish, pepper grinder, and more. For Wanda and Phil Sykes, those monuments of discovery are what makes part of Riverside Mill so rewarding. At an estate sale in Tarboro, they removed a pegged wood built-in wardrobe from 1905 that still bore the family name in ornate lettering. The Sykeses researched the name and determined that it belonged to one of the first Jewish families to live at Edgecombe County, and that it had been a gift to the daughter on the occasion of her wedding. Learning of its origins, a Jewish couple driving south from New York fell in love with it and bought it on the spot. Like so many of the items scattered about Riverside Mill, the old wardrobe's cultural roots had come full circle. Riverside Mill is at 200 Mill Street in Weldon. Their web address is riversidemill.net. And you're listening to Our State Magazine on the North Carolina Reading Service. Comments, questions, 919-832-5138. And now, the Redneck Barbecue Lab in Benson, part of the I-95 road trip, the science of smoke. The mad scientists of Johnson County have won hearts and awards with their smoked pork, chicken, and beef brisket. And the experiments continue at the Redneck Barbecue Lab in Benson. They're always cooking up something new. It's not Eastern barbecue, so there's no need to check your map to see if you somehow took a turn toward the setting sun and wound up along the Rio Grande. And it's not Western North Carolina barbecue either, that tangy, coarse-chopped food of the gods that made Lexington a household name. This is competition-style barbecue, so don't judge it based on your notions of the cue of your youth. Just open your mouth and your mind and give a forkful of the Redneck Barbecue Lab's brisket or pork or burnt ends an honest try. It may not be like any barbecue you've ever eaten, but it's barbecue you surely won't forget. In 2016, when Jerry Stevenson opened the joint in the former Dairy Queen at the intersection of Interstate 40 and North Carolina Highway 210, just east of McGee's Crossroads in Johnston County, he was met with breathless exclamations of joy. He recalls those early conversations, grinning so big his blue eyes nearly disappear. Folks said, it would be wonderful to have Eastern North Carolina barbecue back here again, he remembers. It would be awesome to have whole hog barbecue right down the road again. Oh, man, I've missed hush puppies. And I had to say, nope, I'm not doing any of that. What he's doing is slow-smoking prime cuts of pork, chicken, beef brisket, turkey, and link sausage based on his award-winning cuisine in the rarefied air of competitive barbecue cooking. Stevenson and his sister, Roxanne Manley, make up the Redneck Scientific Barbecue Team, considered first-order royalty in the highly impassioned world of competitive barbecue. Together, they've won 24 grand championships and 20 reserve grand championships in Kansas City Barbecue Society competitions. They fired up the smokers and the judges at the Jack Daniel's World Championship Invitational Barbecue and the American Royal World Series of Barbecue. While Stevenson handles the smokers, Manley specializes in desserts and side dishes. She's won world championships for her beans, potatoes, and vegetable recipes and top awards for her desserts. In a single competition, they might go brisket to brisket with hundreds of teams from around the world. It's just been unimaginable, Stevenson says, shaking his head. Just me and my sister. How cool is that? We get to share who we are and where we're from. It's been an incredible gift. And one he's sharing with growing crowds in Johnston County. And soon to be Wake County at the Redneck Barbecue Lab is about to open its second location in Raleigh's North Hills District. At the Redneck Barbecue Lab, headquarters in Johnston County, Stevenson's official corporate title is Chief Redneck in Charge. The first of the chicken and ribs go in the smokers at 5 in the morning. It's an early start, Stevenson says, but it's a necessity. They'll run out of those first chickens and ribs by mid-afternoon. A second run hits the heat at 11 a.m., bound for supper plates. By then, the pork has already been smoking for an hour. At 3 p.m., beef briskets head to the Redneck Barbecue Lab Day Spa for their own hours-long deep-tissue smoke session. Stevenson uses the same sauces, rubs, charcoal, and wood that he and his sister use at competitions. Hickory lends the meat its signature smoky flavor. Cherry dials back the bite and gives the meat a little kiss of that red that makes it pretty. He says, there are no commercial rubs or sauces. Everything is made on site and nothing is frozen or held for the next day. That approach extends to the side dishes. They are hand-stripped collards and turnips grown just down the road. Cornbread from a custom milled recipe that Stevenson developed with Atkinson Milling Company in nearby Selma, and bread and butter pickles straight from his Aunt Mirt's 100-year-old recipe. Customers get everything we do in a real competition, except the performance, he says. And Stevenson is no stranger to pig-centric performance. He was raised in Onslow County in a world of Southern manners, growing up in Jacksonville. It was Mr. This and Mrs. That, a solid country upbringing, he says, and we cooked whole hog barbecue because I was from Eastern North Carolina, and that's just what you do. In college at East Carolina University, where he earned 3 degrees, including a master's in psychology, Stevenson cooked for campus parties and tailgates and even trademarked a grill design using a 55-gallon metal drum configured to customize a backdraft oxygen flow. The grills were so efficient that he could load them into his pickup truck and drive down the highway with the meat cooking on the way. We'd roll up at whatever party we were catering, and people would holler out, "Look at that bunch of rednecks with their trash cans on fire." Once we pulled out the food, there wasn't much talking because all they were doing is fighting to get into line. At ECU, Stevenson also worked for a psychology professor who took him under his wing in a life-changing way. He said, "I want to show you how we do applied science here at ECU," Stevenson says, reveling in the story. "And then he showed me how to make beer. That was the start of it all. Through his scientific approach to brewing beer, I learned how data was collected and used and studied, but how to look for patterns and concrete evidence that we were doing worked and why, and more importantly, how to replicate success." Years later, when he entered the competitive barbecue circuit, Stevenson carried that database approach with him. He weighs each ingredient in grams. He's documented every pound of meat that's ever gone into his smokers. "We are extremely detail-oriented," he says. "It's no joke that we call ourselves a barbecue laboratory. It's not a dash of this or a dash of that. It's all based on what I learned from applied science." But like a science lab, in the world of competitive barbecue, so much of the magic takes place behind a curtain. Certified judges in a tent do the taste testing. Spectators, Stephen explains, can see the meat on the grill and smell it cooking, but they can't taste it. They can't even see it when we put it in the boxes for the judges, and how meticulously we style each presentation. It drives people crazy, and that's one aspect of barbecue competition that really bugged me. He's bugged no longer. At Redneck Barbecue, the veil is lifted, and you better get there early. Every day is busy, but weekends are crazy. On Saturdays, it's a beautiful circus here, Stevenson warns. There will be a line. You will have to wait. We might run out of food, but what we cook that day goes out the door that day, and I'd rather disappoint you by running out of food than disappoint you with food that isn't my best. When you eat my brisket or my double-sauced and double-smoked burnt ends, I want you to hear angels singing. The Redneck Barbecue Lab is at North Carolina Highway 210 in Benson. They, of course, have a website, the Redneck BBQ Lab. Well, we just have a few minutes left, so let me go back to the beginning of the magazine and see what we can pick up there. You know what I think I'll do? I think I will describe these first three pictures. We have a beautiful double spread that says, Go with the Flow. Wrightsville Beach. In the summer, Johnny Mercer's Fishing Pier offers a view of happy vacationers digging their toes in the sand, listening to the waves crash, and completely surrendering to the carefree ways of the coast. Oceanfront cottages along the shore turn orange briefly as the sun descends over Wrightsville Beach. Parents give splashing children a final 10-minute warning before it's time to dry off and head in for dinner. Now, this picture is probably taken from the pier because we're out over the waves. There's a couple of big waves cresting here, and they're breaking and then turning into smaller waves, and they're rolling up gently on a beach that still has some late-in-the-day bathers. It's not jammed by a long shot. A lot of people in the water. And we see the full stretch of the beach is just as far as we can see. There's some kind of a tower, like a radio tower, way down the other end, but it's very hard to see. There's a water tower in the middle, and some of you will recognize what that means and where I'm talking about. Water is a gorgeous aqua color. Overleaf in the view from here, Lake Johnson. On the southwest side of Raleigh, a 150-acre lake provides a welcome respite from the rush of downtown. City dwellers looking for a green escape frequent the tranquil Lake Johnson Park to fish, kayak, canoe, hike, or relax in a waterfront hammock. If you happen to catch a sunset here on a clear night, you'll soon see a gradient of orange and blue across the still waters as the day fades away. And that is a perfect description of what we're seeing. It's clear that the day is fading away. We've got a shot here across very still water, a dock leading out from a pavilion, and then the lake continues, and the tall trees and bushes on the other side, because of the angle of the light, are just in silhouette, basically. And at the top of the silhouette, you've got a beautiful orangey, yellowish, fading into pink sunset. We don't see the sun, we just see the color of the clouds. And then up above that, it's light blue, medium blue to dark blue, and then right in the middle, there is a sliver of moon. And finally, Catawba Falls. Water from the Catawba River cascades down a series of boulders that make up the upper portion of these spectacular falls. A warm weather destination for those willing to venture off the beaten path. The 2.5-mile trail starting at Old Fort leads visitors to the towering 100-foot display, which drains into a large pool that's ideal for a cool dip after a strenuous hike. Gorgeous picture here. This one's all green tones, green trees, greenish water at the bottom, covering the waters tumbling down over moss-colored rocks. Very beautiful, beautiful scene of a waterfall. And that is all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you enjoyed it enough that you'll join us next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this magazine is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions, call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.